Hi, pal. Welcome to I've Got Your Back, the podcast. My name is Michelle Sutherland, and this is a place where I want to empower and inspire you to tap into the deepest desires of your heart and discover the magic within. Hi, pals. It's Michelle here, and I am so excited to bring another episode on I've Got Your Back, the podcast. I don't know why it's taken me so long to have this special guest on, but I always believe everything happens in divine timing, and I'm so excited to have Michelle Duval on the podcast today. Hello, Michelle.
Hey, Michelle, we're going to get confused.
There's two Michelles. So yeah, we're going to be like Michelle, Michelle, Michelle D, Michelle S. I just want, before I hand over to Michelle, just to introduce herself, I wanted to just share how we actually met. So I was working this out, and it would have likely been about 10 years ago, 9 or 10 years ago, which I can hardly believe. And I was living in Sydney at the time, and I was introduced to an organization called Investable through Creel Price, and I had done some work with him previously, and he was just starting up Investable. It was like literally the early stages, that first year, which is always the most challenging, or can be the most challenging in startups. And he said to me, come on this Investable program. So it was a crazy idea of bringing 12 very different entrepreneurs together to build a $1 million business in 10 weeks, something wild. And it was very much a testing, very much a testing. They don't do that now, of course, but in the beginning, that was their model. And I was extremely grateful to have all these different sessions with experts to see how we could work together as a team and how we got to know each other or ourselves more deeply. And that's when, Michelle, you walked in and gave us a session. And at that time, it was all about Fingerprint for Success. And we sat in a room, and I'll never forget it. And it was just the most craziest, volatile group of entrepreneurs I've ever been a part of. And it was all going off, and all different people were just playing out exactly their fingerprint for success. And we can explain what that means a bit later. And it was wild. But Michelle, you just held it together. You were just like, okay, let's see how this plays out. And I remember at that time instantly just thinking to myself, this woman is freaking awesome. And I just love her, and I love what she stands for. And the work that you'd done even up until that point, which is now 10 years ago, was incredible. And I just thought, that's a woman I want to be associated with. And from there, we've kept a friendship. We've kept in contact, even though I've moved to Scotland, you're still in Australia. And yeah, I can actually go back at a click of a finger and be in that room with those 12 entrepreneurs and you standing up, just holding this space for probably the craziest 12 entrepreneurs I've ever been in a room with in my life. So that's how we met, and I can't believe it. But for Michelle, for those of you, or for those people out there, the listeners that actually don't know you the way I know you, who are you? What would you say to that?
Wow. Well, I would say I'm a lover. I'm a lover of humans, and I'm a lover of dogs. And sometimes I love dogs way more.
Yes, but dogs is a love language.
Sometimes I love dogs way more. They're much easier to be with sometimes, but I've had an intense, passionate love affair with who we are as humans, who we're becoming as humans, how humans relate with each other, you know, from a business context to what we humans create in the world, to how humans work together, and even how humans love together. So I think that's how I would answer that in the way you framed the question, Michelle. In terms of my work and that part of the question, I've been coaching for the last 20 8 or 9 years. Really, really long time. Well before it was a field, well before you could even say I'm a coach and people would know what it is. Way back when I'd introduce myself, I'd say, so I'm a coach, and people would say, what sports team do you coach? And I had to help educate people on what, executive, business, et cetera, coaching was, and then help people to figure out how to buy it. And then, that was a whole big era all those eons ago. So that's how the body of work started. And more recently, that work has evolved into technology, with the big, hairy, fat, audacious mission to really support and give every single person on the planet the opportunity to realize their potential, and using technology in a way that hasn't been used before for that. So that's what we're up to now.
Amazing. I love that. And Michelle, I just want to touch on that because, like you said, 28, 29 years ago, when you said, I'm a coach, everyone was like, what? Like, sport? What? Like, how did you find that at that time when people, because I imagine, I mean, now there's coaches that just pop up in social media and like, I went through this thing, I'm a coach. I did this thing, I'm now a coach. People say it like a drop of a hat. How was it back then?
Well, people were really taken back. They were like a coach, of humans outside of sport, like an executive or a business owner. What would someone do in that? And so there was, early on, there was extraordinary curiosity, and people were fascinated about the concept that you're trying to say that I don't have to be an athlete to be able to realize my talent, and what is my talent, and what would that look like if I explored it and really leant in the same way, Ian Thorpe, and a great Australian swimmer, did. He decided he had a talent, and he dedicated years and years and years and years and years to becoming, an iconic Olympic athlete. And so in the early era, helping people realize that that was a path that people could pursue outside sport was really inspiring, really exciting. And then there were people who were very critical and skeptical, as we are of anything new. And we see that now. We've been since 2018 building artificial intelligent coaching, artificial intelligent tooling to help human potential. And so we're in a different era, but the same thing. Who, how dare you? Why are you doing that? That's scary. And it is scary. And there's good reason that when any new technology comes, we should be equally optimistic and curious, I think, and also equally cautious, skeptical, and ask all of those questions. So even when it was just a human technology, not just when it was human technology only, we got those questions. And then everyone realized the extraordinary power of having a coach dedicated to you, realizing your potential. And now we're having a new era of that conversation.
And that's what I was going to ask as well. Let's just talk about what is this AI project you've been working on. I didn't actually realize it was that many years, but Marley is her name or its name. And so what, why did you feel the need to make that transition? Because, you could have carried on doing the traditional coaching in its essence. People still pay for that today. People still want that today. Even it's probably easier to do that today than it ever was. Why do you believe in Marley, and why do you believe in this AI coaching tool? Like, why do you believe the world needs it and should, and quite rightly, have the caution, but equally lean into it? Why do you think that is?
I remember back all the way back in 2002, I started collaborating with a good friend of mine from Germany. Her name's Vipka. And Vipka and I, even back then, I was 4 years into the journey of supporting humans as a coach. And we were so disappointed that as a professional coach, the cost of a coach fits in the category of a lawyer, an accountant. If you get the services of a coach, it's a consulting model. And so it ends up being a really expensive model. And it means that only like CEOs, founders, actors, people who are already got some level of financial means can afford to employ or be assigned as a senior manager at work your own dedicated professional. And I will talk more about what it means to be a professional coach. And that means that 98% of the population is not getting access to their potential. So suddenly human potentials become this gated thing that only if you happen to be in a really incredible business that they invest in you, or you yourself have already achieved some means that you can afford to make that investment in yourself. And that's just an extraordinary limitation. It felt to me back then in 2001 and two, when we were exploring this, it felt like an extraordinary deprivation. It felt like education being not available to everybody. And we know that is even still the case in some parts of the world, and that eats me up as well. And so for all these decades, it's really been something that's really unsettled me. And I've had various different things, like Vipka and I did, is where we developed a volunteer program, got coaches all around the world, and started to do volunteer coaching. And we did that for a little while, but there were a whole lot of limitations inside of even that getting to the people it needed to get to. And so then in 20 sort of 17 and 2018, we'd released our first technology. That was when we met you, Michelle, was working with founders and being able to democratize insights about startups and help more people be successful in startups. And so we got such great traction in being able to, failure rates vary between 90 to 98% in startups. And so we wanted to radically impact that because we had insight that we could, and we did, and we still are. And so with that sort of under our belt, we were like, let's tackle the big one. Let's tackle the whole population, and let's find a business model that will allow us to do that. And let's allow that to be one that will allow us to build a very successful business and choose the business model that allows the product to be utilized for free by most of the world. And so that was a combination of deciding on the product development that could do that. And interestingly, coaching is a linguistic model. And in 2002 and three, I'd co-developed linguistic language models. I've been coaching by then for 6 or 7 years, and it's a language model. We'd by 5 years after that, so 2007 and eight, and since then, over 10,000 human coaches have been trained in these linguistic language models. And so we'd had success in training 10,000 humans, which means multi-millions of people have been coached by a human using these linguistic language models. So I had the idea that it would be possible to use artificial intelligence to be able to develop a coach that would be able to use these same linguistic evidence-based from the cognitive science, self-actualizing psychology, positive psychology, evidence-based models to train an AI. As ba even back then, it was an AI agent. In 2018, 2019, that would be able to do an end-to-end, not just one coaching conversation, but end-to-end coaching program over 8 weeks, and to be able to coach to over 1,000 different goal types. And this was it. This was in then in 2019.
Wow. And Misha, just first of all, I just want to say well done for realizing, I don't think there's any surprise. 97, 98% of startups fail. 97, 98% of the population don't have access to coaching or someone, a listening ear or something to guide them or help them. You can see that that's there, first of all. But I think the fact that you took the leap of faith because you were seeing this, and the word that was coming through for me there was accessibility. This is not accessible to all, and it needs to be something accessible to all for obvious reasons that you've seen in the multi years before that with the human to human element. How have you found that? So 28, 2018, 2019, so a significant amount of time you've been working in this AI space. First of all, it started off as Fingerprint for Success, because I mentioned that at the beginning, and now it's evolved into Marley, and this is, this is how it's formed. Like, how have you found that? How have you found those years? Is it What's the impact been actually? How have you found it, and what's the impact been so far?
Okay, well, the impact so far is that we have users in 195 countries utilizing AI to develop themselves, to achieve their goals, to work with their team, and to start to realize either their personal potential or their team's potential or their actual organizational potential. And now Marley is used in 70% of Fortune 500 companies. There's teams inside those companies, and 90% of Fortune 100 companies. So we're really grateful for the momentum, and the momentum's come from people utilizing it and finding it really valuable to solve really meaningful challenges that they are having in themselves, in their work, in their team, around collaboration, performance, and all the things that are happening with AI transformation, how that's changing work. And so that's the impact so far. And we're still just at the very beginning, Mish. We're like so early in that journey. How have we found it? Really hard.
What would
Really
you call it?
hard.
What would we call it, Michelle? What
We'll just say really hard. We'll just say
Yes.
really hard.
Yeah.
Because back in 2018, 2019, the era that we were at with AI was that Google at that stage couldn't even book a haircut using AI. It was just at the edge of being able to do that. And investors didn't believe that AI was about to take off. So investors were skeptical. Investors were skeptical because I wasn't a software engineer. And they didn't understand because coaching is such a, unless you've ever had a coach, and you realize how rigorous the methodologies are in professional coaching, you don't realize it's scientific, it is evidence-based, it's not woo-woo. Certainly woo-woo things can come out of it, but the methodologies itself are really, in today's world, 25, 29 years into the field, we've made great progress with validation, efficacy, return on investment, blah, 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 blah. But most of the investors, a lot of them have never realized how important consciousness is, how important is that we develop human consciousness. 2018, 2019, didn't realize that at that point in time. So investors were skeptical. So raising money was incredibly difficult. But we made a prototype in 2019, despite not being able to raise the capital at that point for it, which was an odyssey in itself. And it was an extraordinary experience. And the team that we did that with was this tiny, incredible group of people. We made the prototype. And then one of our customers is Canva, and the co-founders of Canva one day in 2019 were like, Michelle, the impact that Fingerprint for Success and you are having at Canva is amazing. We want to know what your vision and your mission is. And I said, well, you know how you're democratizing design? I'm trying to democratize human potential. And they were like, wow, that's cool. How are you going to do that? And I said, well, I'm so glad you asked. Let me show you this prototype. And so I was so grateful to have the prototype. And so the co-founders of Canva privately led our seed round in December of 2019. And we had some extraordinary, pioneering, really thoughtful investors who really believe in human development, human capacity, human potential. They are founders themselves, all the people who came into the round, very well-known people who have built products that have changed the world. And so that was how we raised our seed round. So in January of 2020, you know what that year was, January of 2020, I left my coaching business of then 25 years or whatever it was then, and have been building technology ever since. And so that's a journey of the startup journey of riding capital markets and raising capital and growing and validating the business model and choosing that business model in this era, and then building, incredible technology, which has been intense. We now have the world's largest data set on human motivation in the world. We have 16 billion data points. And we've developed what's called narrow AI models. And we've actually developed 41 narrow small models, which are predictive models. So if you think about the field of health, you've got skin cancer AI, which is really, really reliable AI today, which has been trained to narrowly be able to predict skin cancer as reliably and in many cases more reliably than human doctors. And so that's an example of a small model that has been trained to do one thing. And we've developed in the field of human potential and teaming and collaboration, 41 of those. So that's what we've built over that period of time. And it's all the highs and lows, all the hardships, all the things that I've been coaching founders on, I'm living. Not just me, the whole entire team. So.
Yeah, your team as well. And arguably, and I was with you in 2020, so I remember January 2020 very vividly because we were together and you taking that leap of faith. But arguably, you've built in one of the toughest moments in time, and you'll know that for the last 5 years, it has been very, very difficult on a human level, on a macro level, and an environment level, a political level. Like every set of system has been going wild, right? And you have worked through that. You and your team have actually done that. And to hear all those data points and everything is so, so powerful. Like it blows my mind when you were just saying all those things. And I wonder, so now we're in 2026. I must say, it does feel like things are starting to shift. It does feel like, even though most people would say no, I just feel that we're in a moment in time where, especially the space you're in around humans and technology and AI, I say specifically, I feel it in a bigger level, but specifically what I feel for you in this space is it's two of the most important things we can bring together and do it carefully and ethically and at a time where we need it the most as humans. How do we embrace this time that we're living in, which is technology and AI and the evolution of that, but how do we do it together? And I feel as if you're hitting that space right there. But what do you feel as if now? So obviously you're practicing what you help many people with over the years, founders and business owners. Where do you feel like 2026, where are we at?
Well, we're at a really pivotal moment. So we all know the pandemic was hard for work, and anyone who was at work or entering work has known it was tough. And a lot of people are still carrying that trauma. Everyone wanted to move on, and everyone just wanted to get out of the difficulty of what that was and reinvent themselves or just move on. And a lot of people have been carrying all the trauma of that period. And now that we're in another uncertain time in the world, we're recording this obviously in April, and we all know what's going on in Iran and the rest of the world, and we're all on tenterhooks and wondering, and people on social media are posting it's 2020 again. I'm not laughing because it's a super serious situation that we're in. I'm laughing because, gosh, anyone contemplating going through another 2020, it's really daunting and a very, very scary time for people from that standpoint. So if we put that aside for a moment, and we can't put it aside, but just for this part of the conversation, we come back to it. People are really, really impacted in the way of how they come to work today, any generation at work. And so we've got all of the return to office mandates and companies the world over having extraordinary difficulty doing that. Productivity of everybody at work is extremely difficult. And that's costing the individual a lot. People are experiencing the highest levels of burnout. We have the highest levels of anxiety ever recorded at work. We also have the lowest amounts of productivity ever recorded at work. And one study from 2024 shows that each employee is losing 7.5 hours a week, one working day out of a five a week. They're losing it. They're not productive. And so when you quantify that, that's costing companies billions of dollars. And the individuals, people want to be busy at work. We want purpose, we want meaning, we want impact. But people are so burnt out from the scenario that we've been in. And now we've got AI transformation coming and people are back in fear. We've got the war. Let's bring that back into the conversation. What's that going to mean? And so we're saying very boldly that work is broken. And we need to just really acknowledge that work is broken, and there's lots of coins, two sides to that coin, but even multiple, even additional sides, if that was possible, and lenses to look at it at. So maybe it's like a diamond with multiple lenses. And we've got the individual, we've got the family, we've then got the workplace, then we've got the teams inside the workplace, and we've got the relationships between people at work, then the meaningful work that they want to do and feel like they can't do, the fear of losing jobs. So work is in a massive, the biggest transition since the various different industrial revolutions or agricultural revolutions, as we well know. That's not, we've been talking about that for the last decade and we're now living in it. And so the way that work needs to change and how we need to support leaders and managers to make that shift, and then how we need to support people entering the workforce is the most crucial thing at this time. And so it's exciting from the standpoint of what is opening up for human potential. I am more excited than ever before about that. And I also know that with that evolution and transformation in the most positive way of what we humans can get to experience now in our own evolution, that there is hardship and difficulty on the way initially, and that we need to prepare and support everybody to navigate that.
Yeah, absolutely. What would you say to someone that's in that right now? Because I can really feel what you're saying about work is broken, you know, and I think a lot of people, and in fact, I know a lot of people that are struggling in their workplace and just with life in general. Like, what would you suggest in this moment? Obviously, you know, you're putting something out there to the world around Marley to help and support, but is there any message there? Just in this moment, I just wanted to capture that because you said it so.
Well, I think the first thing is that it's normal to be defensive at first, fearful at first. It's a normal human trait of how we protect ourselves. And it's normal to have anxiety. The thing about fear and anxiety is about the future. You can't have anxiety unless you're thinking about the future. And fear is usually comes from the past. And that's something that's happened in the past, and we have references from the past. So it's really helpful to figure out what's causing each of us to feel what we feel. Is it something from the past that's unresolved, trauma experiences, etc.? We're seeing enormous amounts of people coming into the workplace with really bad experiences at work where they've been bullied, mistreated, just terrible things that they've had, and they're coming to work and they haven't been able to resolve those things. And then they're coming in and they're jumping at all the things that are happening at work. And a lot of it, in some cases, is due to what they've been through, and they haven't yet even recognized that. So that's the part that we can control, is what's my part to be able to understand I'm getting triggered from, what's mine to heal, what's the PTSD of the whatever else they've been through. That's fear, and we can work on that. We can do therapy, we can work with a really great friend, we can listen to podcasts that help us, we can use meditation, hypnosis, we can work with Marley. There's things that we can do to be able to work through and identify and have awareness of what those things are. And then there is being able to build the, and I hate this word because it's become a catch-all, but to build the resilience to be able to navigate constant change, which is the future. And that's where most people are having the anxiety is how can I adjust? And that's where the burnout's coming from. And so that's where adjusting our identities, that they're not fixed to our work and they're not fixed to a title and they're not even fixed to our skills, is probably the most crucial leap that we all need to make, is that I'm a human first and foremost, and I have all of these attributes that I have as a human, and I will still find ways to contribute those. And when we realize that our title is not our identity, it's probably the biggest one that we need to transcend. Whether it's a business owner or whether it be a person in an organization with a title, because they're going to be constantly changing, and we probably won't have titles in the same way that we've had. We'll have goals, and we'll have impact areas, we'll have contribution, we'll have groups of people working towards goals. But titles, and for many people, they've spent their entire university and career working towards that, and their identity is attached to it. And as soon as that shifted, self-esteem, self-worth, self-efficacy, all self to the surface. So it's the first place to work on.
I am smiling so much because I literally had this conversation with a friend 2 nights ago, and we were talking about titles. And we were talking about a particular organization, and we're like, they just need to go because it's creating fear. It's create fear-led leadership. It's creating entitlement. And we were even struggling. We're like, why is this amazing organization not working the way it used to? And we're like, it's the titles. And we actually came down to that one thing, the titles. That's what we realized in that moment. So I'm smiling so much because I'm like, I literally just had this conversation. The other thing, Michelle, I wanted to touch on there, because obviously I wanted to sort of, if anyone was feeling in that moment that, you know, struggle, and I think you answered that beautifully, I wanted to capture that. But equally, your excitement about human potential, because I think there's a stat that we only use or even tap into a tiny, tiny amount of our sort of brain and human potential. What is that? Can you tell us more about that? And like, why are you so deeply excited about human potential? Like, what is it people could actually, if they overcome these fears and anxieties and all these things, what is it they could actually look forward to or move towards?
Well, neuroscientists and different people who are cognitive scientists that study the brain, they have different studies between 1% that we're using of our capability, or up to 10%. And so either way, we're not using anywhere near the capacity that we have. And when you're coaching people, you realize that because and this is a big nuance to say about human potential. There are education which teaches us to learn and to use our brain and to retain information and to do critical thinking and to have logic and to be able to add up and subtract and to write and to use language. Just if you think back all of the hundreds of years ago when language was only in different forms that didn't have it written down and you didn't have a printing press, so you couldn't share, not all of those things have come from human capability and human potential. So when you think about how we've evolved as humans, human potential for me is about evolution. And when we're as a coach, the distinction about coaching is we're not a therapist who's trying to help heal somebody from trauma or life experiences or to support in that way. We're not a mentor who's trying to help people replicate our success and guide them. We're not a consultant who's giving advice. We are not a trainer who has a curriculum or a school teacher teaching. A pure professional coach has one principle in mind, which says, my job is to partner with you to help facilitate you to realize your unique potential. And when you let go of that, that's where you get the greatest inventions of all time. It's where we get the greatest art that shapes culture. It's where we get all of the incredible things that we as humans take for granted today. They've come from somebody who was not trying to be anything else, learn what was already learned. They were going beyond and figuring out that humans could invent electricity. And how much they had to go through and work through in themselves to be able to do that is an extraordinary thing. So if you think about all the leaps forward in humanity, now that we will be able to have AI teammates that we're collaborating with, that we're partnering with, culture will now be about how do we instill these AI agents and teammates with human traits, and Marley will be leaning into that in the future. Our motivations that we measure in Marley can also help develop the AIs to have those motivational traits, as well as supporting the humans and how culture evolves from that standpoint. And as we're not having to focus on so many of the tasks that busied our day, from scheduling to all the automations that will eventually take over, it leaves us to really have to lean into the other parts of who we are and what we're capable of. And the soft, and I hate that word for it, we call them at Marley human skills, but they used to be called the technical skills, hard skills and soft skills. Awful metaphor, because it comes with so many gender biases around what soft means. Soft, by the way, is the most vulnerable and is actually the most strong, but that's a different topic. Is that we are going to be able to discover what human consciousness is. Now, we as human coaches who've been working with humans know the extraordinary capacity that human consciousness has to be able to co-create, to partner with nature, to teleport, to be able to have telepathy. And science is now able to invest the time and energy into evidence-based measurement of all of these things. Now, I just listed four things there, but there are hundreds of other things and capacities that some humans have already been able to develop, and we will discover, explore, etc. So the distinction between human consciousness and machine consciousness, because they have machine consciousness as well, and how researchers are distinguishing between intelligence, which is mostly what machines are encoded with, and human consciousness, and all of those things that to date are very intangible, they're going to become evidenced, become utilized. We're going to have training in all of those things, and those things is going to be what the 22nd century is all about. And all of those capacities that, we have every single one of us an ethical obligation is that we're sitting at the threshold, as in every single era, where when we think about the motor car, The motor car radically changed transportation, which changed other industries and changed everything else. And just like in the motor car, it can be used for good and not good, and like every invention that we've ever invented. So we all need to demand and be certain that we want to consciously create a future that actually allows for all of this to happen, and it's not the dystopian future that it could be. And that takes everybody. It's not just the people who are building the big, large language models. My God, they're just some of the people. We all have a choice every single day in what tools we use, how we use them, the ethics behind them, and everybody needs to take that into their own agency and think about that today in your immediate world with the tools you use, how you use them, with your family, with your team, etc.
Yeah, totally, Michelle. Gosh, there's so much I want to pick up on there. It's like ping, ping, ping. I think the first thing was innovation when you spoke about, electricity. So obviously that was invented in Scotland by a Scottish inventor. And I've obviously moved back to Scotland. I felt as if the land pulled me back. And when I look at the list of inventions that have come from Scotland, it's like the list is ginormous, and I couldn't help but think, and I've been playing with this thought, and it goes back to your ethics as well around our choices we make and how we embrace AI and this love that you're using 22nd century, because I don't think we've been using that term, that we need to start using 22nd century. But one thing I've been playing with and curious about is how do we tap into our ancestral intelligence as well as artificial intelligence? How do we use them? And I think you were saying it, how do we tap into that deep ancestral wisdom and knowledge and grounding and land and nature? You mentioned nature as well with AI. How do you do it together? I feel as if it's together,
Yeah.
not separate. Does that make sense?
100%. It's together and one enables the other. And so it's together and also the enablement from each other.
Yeah, that's amazing. Oh God, I could talk about so many things. I want this conversation to go on for a long time. However, there's one thing that I did want to show. So if you're watching on YouTube, you will see this in your screen now. But for those of you that aren't, this book actually arrived in perfect timing. It arrived last week, all the way from, was that from? No, it was
Was
Australia.
from the UK, was from the UK.
It was from the UK. Okay, good. That was good. And it's called Find Your Work Verse. And it's Gen Z's playbook to thrive at work with AI, with humans, with purpose. And this is a book you co-wrote with Dan Negroni and with Coach Marley, so who we've been speaking about. So I've literally only just started reading this because it only arrived last week. But one of the things I love is on the back of the book, all the quotes around this book are from 24-year-olds, 22-year-olds, 16-year-old, 21-year-old, and so obviously very geared towards Gen Z. How did this come about? How did this book come about? And like, why has it come now? Because obviously it's literally just been released. It's just come out in the last few weeks. Like, why now?
Well, we were hearing from so many Gen Zs about their level of anxiety about the future. And then we were hearing from Gen Z parents and Gen Z managers how managers just do not know how to manage Gen Z. If you look in the media has taken this lens that Gen Z is lazy, that Gen Z can't work, Gen Z are entitled, Gen Z are all of these really, really negative words. And then the parents have not known how to help them. I mean, this is the generation that finished university and started their first jobs during the pandemic. They are the ones who've studied at university, and their job that they were going to go into with all their student loans no longer exists. They're the ones who are graduates, and graduates are struggling to get roles in many places, and they're not being able to get that. They can't even think about how they're going to afford to buy a house in most countries. And so this generation is extremely suffering. And then for a period of time, I was living between out of Sydney and in Sydney, and I was living in Bondi for part of the time, and I was living with a house of four Gen Zs, three Gen Zs, and me. And I, spent many nights with them and chatting, and These wonderful, incredibly smart, creative, mature, thoughtful, fully aware people had already done and dropped out of two different degrees because they were, all of them, trying to find their path. Two of them told me that it was very common at their school for students to have committed suicide. And there, I just understood the plight of this serious, serious issue. And so I got thinking, we had this incredible global data set, and I wanted to be able to look at the data. What is the data telling me? Why is this happening? We know the events that have occurred, but why is it changing people's motivations towards work and how they think about their futures? How can we help? What can we do? And so we pulled all of our data and we took a sample of data over 25 years and we broke it into the different generations looking at data that longitudinally and also temporally now. And we looked at baby boomers, Gen X, and millennials and Gen Z. And we saw extraordinary transmission of the data that was changing. So, for example, baby boomers had very strong initiation, super proactive, don't need to know much, can start things, can figure things out on the go. And as the generations have changed, we can see that the youngest generation at work, Gen Z, is absolutely in the data, terrified to take the first step and to start anything. They also don't trust themselves to make their own decisions. So when we look at the baby boomers and then Gen X and Gen millennials, all comfortable to some degree to be able to have a point of view, have their own criteria for making a decision, trusting themselves. Then we look at Gen Z and they are not comfortable to make the decisions. They really, really need the external input of others to make those decisions. That's just two data points. Just two. And so it's a radically different environment for them that they're entering into. Their motivations are radically different. And workplaces, instead of saying Gen Z's wrong, workplace needs to evolve and change. And we want to, through the book, help Gen Z to be empowered, to realize their strengths, their talents, why the workforce in the world needs them. Their values that they have as a generation are the values that Gen X would have loved to have seen in the workforce, and millennials have tried to be, and they just are Gen Z. So they're our future leaders, but sadly, none of them are motivated to lead. Not none. The data shows that majority are not motivated to lead. And so that's a very sad thing because we need future leaders. We need our workplaces to shift radically to participate and partner with Gen Z because they're the ones that are going to create the most incredible future. And so we want them to realize their value, their impact. We want parents to have some tools to help the Gen Zs in their life. And we want managers to be able to be empowered with tools to help and to be able to have leaders change the workplace.
Yeah, amazing. And I'm so grateful you guys have done this work because there's nothing worse than existing in a world as a human and being categorized as that generation and being completely like shot down before you're even like, you're just starting out. You're just like beginning your career, or maybe even earlier than that, and you're just getting tagged with all these labels. And it's just like you said, it's a very unique place they've been born into and a very unique situation they find themselves in. But like you said, there's so much potential with the other generations together, and we're all helping each other out because we're stronger. Obviously, baby boomers are stronger in other stuff, and Gen Z are stronger in the value list. So imagine that fusing together, unstoppable. So yeah, I have now got this book. I am looking, obviously, after I read it, I'm looking for a place in Scotland to position this. So if anyone has any ideas, if you're listening in Scotland, or if it's like a library or somewhere to put this book, or maybe one day Michelle will come over to Scotland and we'll do a wee book launch and a wee talk, maybe Michelle,
I'd
Scotland.
love to do that, Michelle. I've not been to Scotland yet. It's a place I very much want to go to.
Yeah, you need to tap into our ancestral intelligence when you get here. But yeah, so incredible. Wow, Michelle, we've covered so much. Such a fruitful conversation, and I believe really worthwhile in this moment in time. Is there any final words or final message you feel right now that you need to say? Anything that's been said or unsaid, what's the message that you want to leave people with?
I would just say, and we talk about this in the book Workverse, but you don't have to be Gen Z to think about this because it's relevant, I think, to us all. After all these decades of sitting with the world, some of the world's most extraordinary people who have been super conscious, super aware of mission and purpose, etc., and then many, many other people who don't know their purpose and they just know that they want to be the best mum or dad that they can be. And that's what the coaching that we've done has been about, irrespective of the gamut of all of those things, is that the idea of purpose and meaning is probably one of the most important things that separates us with our consciousness from other forms of intelligence that's emerging on the planet. And our purpose and our meaning, we often think if we don't know what it is, it has to be something like Elon Musk, do you know what I mean? Or Steve Jobs, or Maya Angelou, or someone like this. And we think it needs to be that grand, and we discount and think that our own unique purpose is insignificant or insubstantial, or it should be grander or greater. And it's the most misconception that exists in the world is that. It really is the most misconception. I remember when I was sort of learning about myself and what made me and what my unique capacities were, and I realized that I had a really unique capacity to listen. And I just assumed that everybody else listened like me. And I had no idea how unique my way of listening was. And I discovered that it actually was different to others. And so it wasn't until I started to explore it. And one of the things that we have in Mali, it's a little coaching program you can do, which is about articulating, your life's purpose, but you can also do that in the book, is asking a question, what do I love to do and I can do now? And, I'm really listing those things that you absolutely love to do. You love, like you, if you were in the worst moment in your life, going through whatever you were going through, what do you still, no matter what, that you can do and that you love to do, and that you just enjoy doing, and you uniquely have some sort of capability inside of it. So, on my little thing of those lists, when I was working through this, was listening, and I just love being so curious to listen and to find structure and meaning and to help other people to listen to themselves and this whole cycle. And that was how, just by acknowledging that and recognizing that, my listening, which every single, not everybody unfortunately has hearing, but a lot of people have hearing, most. And I assumed that was, just a given, right? And when we stop and just lean into those unique things, that has grown into all the things that I do. But it only got there because I dared to acknowledge, you know what? I listen in a slightly different way to others, and that's unique. And then because I loved it so much, I decided to make that my thing and become a coach when the field didn't even exist. And I co-developed with others a field. And now we're into the things that we're into. So never, ever underestimate the things that you take for granted from the way that you plate up your meal for your partner, or the way that you put your clothes on when you're 3 years old with this and with this and with that. And then you've been doing that ever since, and you've got like a funky, cool start. Whatever it is that you love to do, it doesn't have to be Elon Musk, for example, whether you like him or hate him. He didn't start out with all of that from the get-go. He started out with little things that he just loved doing and just gave himself permission. And when I use the example of Ian Thorpe, the swimmer, he just gave himself permission to say, I like doing this. And his parents realized he liked it, so they supported it. Do you know what I mean? So first and foremost, for anyone else to value your little unique thing, they could become all sorts of things. And it could impact just one person, your child, by how you show up to be whatever it is that you are, or it could impact anything, all sorts of things. You first have to bear witness to it and be willing to go, you know what? I love this little thing and I'm actually okay at it. That's our first step.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Michelle. It's been an absolute pleasure. And I've just loved this conversation. Thank you so much. And I hope you have a great day. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Thank you, Michelle.
Bye. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I really hope you enjoyed it. Remember, download the Yoga Nidra right after this episode. Make sure you have a listen. It's the most beautiful guided meditation that will regenerate your mind, your body, and your soul. Take care. See you soon.